Every day we're inundated with news that waistlines in the United States are expanding, that our health is getting worse.
But a new study shows that despite all the bad news, there may be a glimmer of hope. Our diet seems to be getting better nationwide.
Researchers surveyed nearly 34,000 people over 13 years to monitor how their diets had changed and what foods people were eating.
But overall, how much has the American diet improved, and what can we do to make sure everyone across the country is eating a beneficial, healthy diet?
Dr. Darius Mozafarian joins us now. He's a cardiologist and the dean of the Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition, Science, and Policy. Dr. Mozafarian, thanks so much for joining us today.
Happy to be on the line with you. Thank you.
Well, let's talk about this study. What kind of overall improvements did you see in the food we're eating?
Well, so, you know, we were really interested in this because food is now, really poor eating is now the number one cause of poor health in the United States and also globally. So really understanding what people are eating, how it's changing over time, and how it differs, according to education or income or race is crucially important. And what we found is that, you know, on average, actually, there's been some slow improvements and some steady improvements. And in particular, we found, you know, more greater intakes over the last 15 years or so of whole grains, of whole fruit, of nuts, and yogurt, and lower intake of refined grains, white potatoes, and sugar-sweetened beverages. Now, there was some sobering news as well. The sobering news is even with those improvements, still, you know, the American diet is not great, and very few people have an optimal diet, and, you know, at least two-thirds of Americans don't meet guidelines for many components. So improving, but still a long way to go. And then secondly, you know, while there were improvements seen really among all subgroups of Americans, the improvements were much smaller among people with lower education or lower income or who were Black or Hispanic. And so, you know, while their diets improved, the gaps, the dietary divide between the rich and the poor, or the educated and the uneducated is growing wider.
I want to talk about the reasons for the improvement and maybe for some of those gaps you just mentioned. We've been hearing for years, most of us probably from elementary school on, about what good food is. How much of this is a story about education, telling people what they should and shouldn't be eating, what's healthier and what's unhealthy food? How much of it is convenient access to that food, ready ways to prepare it, to afford it in some cases?
Well, you know, I think that what people eat is not just an individual choice. It's not just about free will. It's really about a combination of choice, but also the whole food environment. And so both of those things play a big role. And probably, you know, the food environment plays the biggest role. At the end of the day, you can only choose what's kind of around you. So, you know, I think that we talk a lot about how it's difficult to change diets, but we forget that diets have changed slowly according to guidelines over time, and they've changed because, again, consumers are making certain choices, and then industry, whether it's supermarkets or cafes or restaurants or agriculture, they respond also to the guidelines. And so, you know, in the 1980s, we recommended low fat, and industry and consumers responded by lowering fat. I think in the last 10 years, there's been more of an emphasis on eating minimally processed whole foods, on reducing, you know, starches and sugars. And with that, whether it's, you know, industry or consumer behavior or both, there's been a shift. And so I think that what this is good news in a sense. It means that Americans are hearing the message, and whether it's Americans in industry or Americans in their choices or both, you know, we can't tell from this study, but it's probably a combination of both.
When we talk about health and science research, sometimes people say if they watch the health headlines and track every study, oh, eggs were healthy, then they weren't healthy, then they were healthy again. They worry about variations in the kind of science people are doing. Is there a baseline, though? Are there things that we really know for sure are healthy and unhealthy? And if so, what are they?
Yeah, I think this is a, you know, question that comes up all the time. Is nutrition science solid? Is it changing so much over time that we just can't believe anything? And, you know, from being a cardiologist, from you know, having training in public health and being sort of having a foot in many different fields, you know, I can tell you convincingly that nutrition science doesn't change or advance any differently than any other science. It doesn't change or advance differently than physics or genetics or, you know, what we do after treatments we give after a heart attack or treatments we might give for certain cancers. For all of those fields, the science changes over time. What's different is that in nutrition, first of all, that's very public. So, you know, the public doesn't really notice and pay attention if physicists change a theory or say, in addition to visible matter, there's dark matter and dark energy. You know, nobody goes ballistic and says, why are you changing physics? But for food, you know, if you change something over time because the science has improved, everybody notices. So that's one challenge. The second challenge is that, you know, the media naturally likes to highlight stories about food because the public is really passionate about this. And so that can tend to overemphasize or underemphasize, you know, the science changing. And then thirdly, in addition to the actual science changing and the media, you know, emphasizing maybe some of those changes a little more than they should, there's thousands of people who are writing blogs and books and talking about food who aren't necessarily experts in every case. And so they're also kind of adding to the noise. And so I don't think that the science is any weaker or changes more than anything else. I think it's really this combination of just this cacophony of voices that are really amplifying this. And so I think that what we've learned over the last 15 or 20 years, you know, this is a relatively young science in terms of nutrition and how it affects our long-term health. And what we've learned is that, you know, it's not about single nutrients anymore. It's not about counting vitamin X or vitamin Y or counting the percentage of calories just from protein or from carb or from fat. It's about foods and food patterns and how foods are prepared and how they're processed. And so I think that that's really the solid knowledge we have now. And I would say we know 30 to 50% of what we need to know about how foods affect, you know, health. And there's still a lot left to know, but at least we know that 30 to 50% pretty solidly.
So we're not going to see a headline, at least not a legitimate headline anytime soon, that says, forget the fruits and vegetables, eat potato chips and drink soda.
Yeah, I mean, that's at least been something that's been consistent since the 1980 guidelines, eat fruits and vegetables. And of course, we've refined that a little bit. We now understand that maybe starchy vegetables, in particular white potatoes, you know, there's a lot of starch, and so you don't want to go too heavy on those. And among the fruits, you know, we're starting to realize that berries with their active phenolics might be particularly beneficial. So that message has been refined. But yeah, I don't think that's going to change. And really, I think, you know, one of the simple golden rules about what to eat is, you know, to eat foods that give rise to life. So nuts, seeds, beans, fruits, whole grains, you know, these are foods that all are packed with nutrients and phytochemicals to help preserve a new life growing in a sometimes harsh environment. And so think about all of those powerful protective nutrients being consumed by our body. So that's a really good simple rule. And then in addition to thinking about foods that give rise to life, I think yogurt with its probiotics and fish with its omega-3s can be kind of added to the list. And of course, vegetables, given their nutrients. So that's a pretty short list of foods that we should focus on eating. And I think the foods we should really avoid are all the starch and sugar and refined carbohydrates and processed meats and other highly processed foods. And everything else, chicken, eggs, you know, butter, cheese, kind of falls in the middle where it's not the best thing to eat. It's not the worst thing to eat. You know, it's kind of something you can enjoy as a side rather than, you know, getting fixated on completely avoiding or making it the only thing you eat.
Talking to Dr. Dariush Mozafarian from the Tufts-Friedman School of Nutrition Policy. New study says over time we are eating healthier, except Dr. Mozafarian, you mentioned racial disparities by income. What's some of the worrisome news you found there?
Well, you know, as you mentioned, our school studies both the science of nutrition and also the policy and what should be done. And so these findings are really, you know, problematic for us because what we found is that, again, while all groups are improving, and so, you know, for example, among those with more than a college education, we found that people with it defined as having a really poor diet decreased from about 40% to about, you know, 30%. Among people with less than a high school education, it decreased, but it decreased from 63% to 58%. So still many more than half are still eating a poor diet. And so, you know, this growing dietary divide between the rich and the poor, between the more educated and less educated, and between blacks and Hispanics and whites, we noticed is growing. And that's, you know, worrisome because people who are at lower, you know, social advantage not only have worse diets, but they're at higher risk for disease. And this goes all the way from childhood on. So a child who doesn't eat well, doesn't concentrate well in school, isn't productive, and, you know, an adult who isn't able to eat well might not do well at work, might get sick. And so not only does, you know, poverty and low education contribute to poor diets, but poor diets then feed back in a vicious cycle and worsen, you know, people's lives. So I think it's really worrisome, and it, you know, I think it, there's many reasons for that we can, you know, think about that might be causing this.
What's a policy solution to those disparities?
Well, so I think what we've learned, again, this is where the policy science has advanced along with the nutrition science. I mean, I mentioned that one of the big things we've learned in the nutrition science side is to not think about single nutrients, but think about overall foods and think about the good, think about the good food that we should be eating. On the policy science side, you know, what we've learned is that, you know, to think about food choices as just free will, like we're all kind of cowboys riding on the range and we just can eat anything we want, is really a flawed, you know, way to think about it. The food system is complex, and what we eat is determined by so many external factors, from macro things like climate change and trade agreements and multinational companies, all the way down to local things like your culture and your friends and your sleep and your TV watching. So and the price of food and so on. So, you know, what we've learned is that focusing on education and labeling and kind of just giving information to the consumer, you know, works best for those who need it least, and can widen disparities. Whereas systems approaches that change the prices of foods or change the culture around food or change the access to foods, you know, or change quality standards for foods, those kinds of systems approaches can actually, you know, reduce disparities or at least not worsen them. And so, you know, we need much stronger government policies to give us safe food the same way we have safe cars, safe toys, safe homes. We need to extend that kind of idea about safety to our food system.
We're talking about a new report showing overall improvements, but still room for improvement in the American diet. Dr. Dariush Mozafarian is with us, head of the Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition and Science and Policy, and he's a co-author of this new report.
And we'd like to hear from you on this. Do you feel like your diet is getting better, or are you still looking to improve what you eat and trying to find the ways to do that? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page or email your thoughts to talk@wpr.org. We're continuing our conversation about the changing American diet. According to a new study, diets in the United States seem to be getting better.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you tried to eat healthier in recent years? That's the individual level. Big picture, why do you think we eat a lot of bad food? What would it take to get us to eat healthier stuff? Call in 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Dr. Dariush Mozafarian is with us, Dean of the Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition and Policy, cardiologist, a co-author of this new report. Dr. Mozafarian, looking at the policy level, some people have pointed at things like really fundamental policy things like the U.S. Farm Bill and said, you know, subsidies for commodities over the years like corn have really driven us to eat more starchy food, corn syrup, sweetened sweet stuff. We should be focusing more on subsidizing healthier foods, the fruits, the vegetables, the whole grains. Is that part of the story, do you think?
Well, you know, there are, you know, billions of dollars going to agricultural subsidies. There's actually controversy about how much those billions of dollars actually change the commodity prices of foods, because on the global market, even though, you know, let's say $20 billion total goes to agricultural subsidies each year, that's just a fraction of the total costs of foods. And in fact, for something like corn syrup, this has been highlighted all the time that, you know, people have said that we're subsidizing corn syrup, which makes soda cheaper. You know, the thing that's not mentioned is we're actually putting tariffs on Brazilian sugar and other sugar from elsewhere to protect corn farmers. So corn syrup actually isn't cheap. Corn syrup is more expensive than sugar from Brazil, but we put tariffs on that to protect the corn farmers. So if we actually got rid of the subsidies and got rid of the tariffs, price of sugar would drop in this country. So I think there's probably been a little bit too much focus on that $20 billion of agricultural subsidies, although it could be better spent. And I think there should be more focus on the other $80 billion in the Farm Bill, the much larger proportion of the Farm Bill, which is actually spent on feeding programs. About 1 in 4 Americans are fed directly by different feeding programs in the United States, Meals on Wheels for the elderly, WIC for pregnant women and young moms, and largest of all, SNAP, the former food stamps program. And SNAP in particular doesn't have any strong guidelines about what you can buy. I mean, you can't buy pre-prepared foods, you can't buy alcohol, but other than that, you can pretty much buy anything. And there's been a lot of conversation about changing that to at least have some incentives to buying healthier foods and disincentives. So I do think that the Farm Bill is relevant, but it's more relevant for SNAP, I think, than for the subsidy side. And many other things can be done, you know, restrictions of marketing to kids, that's done in Europe, and that's really, I think, crucial for the United States. I think thinking about schools and workplaces both, and giving, you know, financial incentives and other incentives for workplaces to have comprehensive worksite wellness programs, quality standards, simple quality standards. We've done it for trans fat. We need to do it for, you know, things like salt and added sugar and maybe even starch. Have some simple quality standards about what's safe. You know, I think that there's not going to be one silver bullet, but I think the government working with industry can really put together a menu of effective policies.
Go to our callers now with Lolly on the line in Baraboo. Lolly, hi.
Hi. Glad to be on the show. I just wanted to share with you guys something kind of interesting. My husband and I saw a show called In Defense of Food, and my husband literally got up to go see what the ingredients in his coffee creamer were. And we, because of watching that show, did a pretty radical change in our diet in terms of we cut out, you know, added sugars, we quit drinking Diet Pop, and we have a shake every morning with greens, Greek high-protein yogurt, nuts, fruit, like those dark berries you were talking about. And this is huge because my husband, like, I've been drinking shakes for over a year, and he just was always like, no, thank you. And now he is the one that says to me, so are we having a shake this morning?
Wow. Well, Lolly, thank you so much for sharing that story. Dr. Mozafarian, do you think it works that way for most people? This sounds like an epiphany, almost a religious epiphany for Lolly's husband. Is it more of a slow drip, a slow burn for a lot of people?
Well, you know, this is a story I'm hearing more and more. People are, you know, really passionate about understanding how to eat healthier now, and especially people under 25, you know, really get this. There's two complicating factors. First, the definition of what's healthy. There's still a lot of confusion about that. And so what we just heard was actually a pretty good definition of healthy foods, you know, yogurt, nuts, fruits, vegetables, cutting out processed foods. That's fantastic. But other people are focused on things that really don't have a direct impact on a person's health, like organic or not, you know, local or not, GMO or not, grass-fed or not. I mean, those things are maybe important for the environment or animal welfare or local economies. But in terms of health, you know, one example I like to give is that you can have local, organic, non-GMO fries and a Coke, and it's still fries and a Coke. So, and conversely, you can have a non-organic apple that's shipped from somewhere else, and maybe that's not good for the environment, but it's still an apple. So I think that the story we just heard is fantastic, and many people are shifting that way. And what I like is she didn't mention weight, because many people change their diet only to change their weight, and I think that's not the right approach. Whatever your weight, thin or a little bit overweight or really overweight, whatever your weight, if you change your diet, you will be much, much healthier. And of course, over time, a person's weight will likely improve, but that shouldn't be the end goal.
Lolly, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Tim in Eau Claire. Tim, hi.
Hi. Had a heart attack at 29 years old. And after that, I started to adopt an anti-inflammatory diet, which has helped me feel much better. Touching on your weight, haven't lost any weight, but I still feel much better. And I'm hoping that he can touch on the idea of corn syrup. Specifically, my understanding is that corn syrup has some sort of chemical that blocks the receptors that tell you that you're full.
Tim, thanks for the call. Sorry about the heart attack. Good luck on your health changes. Dr. Mozafarian, we hear this a lot, that there's something particularly bad about corn syrup. I don't know if all the science is in fact or fiction. Should we just be cutting down on the sweet stuff in general?
Yeah, no, I think here it's again where the conventional wisdom just doesn't match the science. And so it's not that corn syrup is good for us, but corn syrup is about half glucose molecules and half fructose molecules. And that's the same as natural sugar from beet or from cane. It's the same as honey. You know, sugar's half fructose and half glucose. And so, again, high fructose corn syrup isn't good for us, but natural sugar isn't really any different. And both glucose and fructose, if sugar in general from whatever source, if it's consumed in small amounts with otherwise healthy foods, if you put a little bit of honey, you know, on some nuts or a little bit of sugar in something really healthy, that's perfectly fine. But if you take a big rapid dose that's digested quickly, sugar's not good for us in any form. And the same is true for starch. I mean, most of the poor carbohydrate in the food supply is actually not sugar, it's starch.
We'll leave it there. Dr. Mozafarian, thanks for joining us. We've been talking to Dr. Darius Mozafarian, a cardiologist looking at a new study on improving dietary habits here in the United States.